Talk Back with Gary Null, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Many a tear have to fall.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. I'd like to think this is an empowerment hour, because I can promise you there's a lot of quality information on wellness and healing and the environment coming at you. No guest today. Instead, I'm going to spend more time than usual going into depth about those silver fillings in your mouth. And I found an article in the Journal of Occupational Medicine and Toxicology, mainstream peer-reviewed journal. And the question they raise, a jocum mutter, is dental amalgam safe for humans? The opinion of the Scientific Committee of the European Commission. This is supposed to be the end-all statement. Okay, the vast majority of Americans, vast majority of people worldwide have silver fillings in their mouths. We assume they're safe. When I complete this discussion, reading verbatim, I think you'll have all the more reason to want to get those silver fillings replaced right away. But first, the latest on health and healing. Want to spice up your love life? It's possible. This is the latest finding, and I'll quote this. It's from the University of Gupta. It says, try adding ginseng and saffron to your diet. Both are proven performance boosters, according to new scientific literature. And it says, indulging in red wine and chocolates, but know that their amorous effects are likely all in your head. Stay away from the more obscure Spanish fly and bufo toad. While purported to be sexually enhancing, they produce the opposite result and are toxic. Those are the findings of the study by Dr. Marcone, professor in the food department and science department, and the results were published in the Journal of Food Research International. However, aphrodisiacs, quote, have been used for thousands of years all over the world, but the science behind the claims has never been well understood or clearly reported. Ours is the most thorough scientific review to date. Nothing has been done on this level of detail before now. Then they went in to look carefully at what would allow a man, for example, to have greater capacity for erection, something that would be similar to a natural form of Viagra or Cialis. And he said why they're opposed to those drugs is because they can produce headache, muscle pain, blurred vision, and have dangerous interactions with other medications. They also do not increase libido, so they don't help people experience better sex drive if they have a low sexual drive to begin with. And the research examined hundreds of studies on commonly used consumable aphrodisiacs to investigate claims of sexual enhancement, both psychological and physical. And ultimately, they included studies meeting the most stringent controls. And here's what they found. Quote, Panax ginseng, saffron, yohimbe, a natural chemical from the yohimbe trees in West Africa, actually improve human sexual function. Also, they improve, quote, sexual desire after eating Mura Puama, M-U-I-R-A, P-U-A-M-A, that's a flowering plant found in Brazil. Maca root, M-A-C-A, you'll find that in a lot of health food stores. It comes as a powder and very good for you, by the way. And the mustard plant in the Andes. And chocolate. And chocolate was not one that created the greatest sexual arousal, but there are particular chemicals in there that directly affect serotonin and endorphin levels in the brain. And that made all the difference. Nutmeg, cloves, garlic, ginger, ambergris, were among the substances that increase sexual behavior. So, aphrodisiacs put to the test of science, actually, many of them prove they work. And all those are easily available. And for a lot of people, especially in Indian cooking and in Eastern cooking, garlic, ginger, nutmeg, and clove are all commonly used. In Oriental medicine, Oriental everyday life, they use Panax ginseng. So those are things that can improve your health, sexual health, and actually increase libido. And the maca root, along with Mura Puama, increased sexual desire. So no reason not to have those. They're all healthy. They're all good for you, and it can make a difference. And by the way, for those men in this audience who've been suffering from problems with your erection, which can have some serious side effects. And here's the problem. A lot of men are afraid to lose their erection. They'll be judged or criticized for not being able to maintain it, and therefore do not spend the quality time in foreplay that would benefit their partner as well as them. They're afraid, and during that foreplay, they'll lose the erection, and hence their need to have intercourse as quickly as possible. I believe that it should be just the opposite. But then again, I also believe that one of the things that's missing in sexual sharing in our society is sharing fantasy, sharing projections, and sharing the world of the other person, even if they are limited. Imagine that you are physically limited. There was a film done by Dalton, I think it was written by Dalton Trumbull, I think it was called Johnny Get Your Gun. I could be wrong on that. It was about a person in the First World War who ends up getting really maimed. No arms, no legs, and is blind. And yet still is able to maintain the mind. Well, just with a mind, think of the power you have if you wish to share that mind with your partner. Now, what does that mean? It means that based upon your conditioning or your experiences, if you've had traumatic experiences, if you've been denied your right to feel anything sexually, and a lot of young women, a lot of men, depending upon their religious views and how strict they held to them, will be made to feel that sex is dirty or guilt or shamed, and completely deny it. They'll literally block their capacity to have sexual pleasure, no matter who they're with or no matter what sexual experience they have. They're just not going to allow themselves that freedom. And I have found that one of the best things you can do for your sexual partner is to first engage in trust that what you share, you're sharing by allowing that person to experience their fantasies. Whether or not they actually experience it in reality or not is irrelevant. Just allow a person to see where they would go with their fantasy. So ask them, what excites them? What would excite them? And suddenly it opens up a Pandora's box. Because rarely do people actually care enough about their partner in a non-judgmental way to say, I'm here to accommodate you. How can we take this experience that we're sharing and add another level of excitement, fulfillment to it? And more often than not, people are fearful. They're afraid of being judged and condemned, or as we've seen in so many relationships, used against them or taken out of context. How easy it is for people to ask you to be open and vulnerable when you are, then they hold it against you. So one of the areas that we seem to condemn people is anything that is outside the norm when it comes to their sexuality. And as a result, knowing that fear in society, then we do just the opposite. We live vicariously through other people's sexual performances. Hence, the number one form of sexual gratification in the United States is pornography. Well, if you actually have a healthy, vibrant, creative sex life, you don't need pornography. But you remember, when you're looking at, if you're a man or woman, looking at pornography and something that excites you, why does it excite you? Is that something you would like to try? Would you like to be one of the participants, the recipient, or the giver of that pleasure? Why? What stimulates you about what you read? If you're reading something that is arousing you, why does it arouse you? is arousing because of how you project yourself into that scenario? Now, the likelihood of ever actually self-actualizing any of this is remote. But what if you simply took one step and encouraged your partner to allow you to help participate in at least releasing the passion and fantasy fulfillment of the mind? Remember, 95% of all sex is mental. 5% is physical. The body is merely the instrument to what the mind can create, and that's why a lot of people are bored with their sex, no matter who their partner is, no matter how attractive they are, because they're only having physical sex. They're having what I call junk food sex instead of gourmet sex, where you can ask without judgment and know that your partner can share with you without fear, and then allow them to experience that fantasy, whatever it may be. And know that if that excites them, that's fine for them. It doesn't mean that it has to excite you. It doesn't mean it has become real. It just means that at least you've allowed an exchange of energy that normally is not in our society. Now, how do I know this is the case? Because for years, I worked with Dr. Elaine Kahn, one of the brightest psychologists I've ever met in my life. And she's retired now, but there was a time when she had the New York Center for Marital and Sexual Guidance. And she asked me, would I work with some of the men who felt uncomfortable opening themselves up to her? She also was aware of an experiment that I did at the Institute of Biology, where I was able to track the energy exchange and the point of which energy was exchanged from a completely different room where you couldn't hear or see the people. All you could see is a bleep on a screen which was showing the energy spikes. And then later when I interviewed the people afterwards, sure enough, when they got their highest point of sexual arousal, that's when that energy spike was. So it opened up a whole new element of going beyond Kinsey. It opened up a whole new dynamic based upon the equipment that I was using from on loan from one of the researchers, Ed Graff, from a major university. And then I started to ask the guys, why do you have premature ejaculation? Why do you think that you feel the urge to ejaculate so quickly? It's all about fear. And then when you take away fear, lo and behold, all these people that I was counseling at the center were able to have normal, non-rushed orgasms. And the same was true in unblocking fears, unblocking negative images, unblocking guilt and shame. And remember, when someone's trying to lay guilt on you, it's the opposite of love. So I would ask him, do you think the people that were telling you what you could and couldn't do loved you? Oh, of course they did. Then I ask, explain how love is, how is love related to fear? Oh, well, I'm not sure. Well, do you think that love and fear can share the same energy in the same way at the same time? And then when they reason through it, they saw that you can't. So where then does fear come from? The fear of being judged, the fear of being attacked, the need to defend oneself, one's religion, one's views, one's body, one's desires, one's fantasies. And the moment that you feel that something you are thinking, conditioned to do, have experienced, have witnessed, is going to be attacked, then immediately the insecurity comes forward and the ego begins to marshal all forms of defense mechanisms and hence the attack. Well, then that's just the opposite of what we want. We want to be able to condition people through love, not fear, and through openness, not resistance and closeness, because defensiveness, fighting, arguing, demeaning, vengeance, emotional violence always follows that stream of highly reflective and highly reactive and non-reflective emotions. So on the one hand, we have people saying, I want love, and what they really want is not love. They want the absence of the fear that they're experiencing, but they're bringing their fear of their experiences past, and all they have when you bring your past experiences into the moment you're in is you have fear. So you can't have fear and love simultaneously in an experience. It's not possible. So just think of how many times people then are angry at the people in their relationships because they didn't get the love that they thought they needed and wanted. But what are they bringing? They're not bringing love. They're bringing fear. And fear disguises itself. And it projects. And where does fear come from? Bad experiences from our past. The trouble is, we are taking our past and making it present. When you bring your past to make it present, you have no present. And you have no future. Because fear is always three steps ahead of you mentally. So no matter where you go, there's going to be fear blocking every door you try to open, every orgasm you try to have, every experience you try to share, every mind that you want to expand. That's how it works. Now, when you come from love, then you don't have fear, and you don't have violence, and you don't have your past. You have the moment. And in that moment, with love, you're able to share the moment for what it is, and that begins a whole new energy exchange. So when you're exchanging pure, beautiful, loving energy with another human being, then there's no regrets, there's no remorse, there's no fear or anger, guilt or shame, recrimination and doubt. There's simply the moment and all that is capable of expressing and experiencing. We are one screwed up nation sexually. I believe that we should be liberated. I believe that we should be open. I believe we should not fear our minds. And yet we are terrified, absolutely terrified, of our individual responses to our own passions. So we limited ourselves. And then one day you wake up and you look in the mirror and your moment has come and gone. How many people today are angry and depressed because of all the opportunities, not just sexual, but all the opportunities to share something of a deeper, more intimate nature with others, and they chose not to because they were afraid of what happens if they are going to be accused or ridiculed or mocked or scorned. And in our society, we realize how narrow the path is we're allowed to travel. And then when you step off that path, when you deviate from that path, when you do not go like everyone else and what everyone else is expected to do, then you pay a price, at least with the people that have conditioned you up to that point. Remember, 90 times we're told no, growing up for every one yes. Think of that. 90 no's to every yes. Now just imagine going forward 5, 10, 20 years. What do you think is going to happen when someone has an opportunity to experience anything in life in a different way? The very first things that they hear are, no, I can't, I shouldn't, I won't. And hence, the gates are closed, the locks put in place. So then it doesn't matter what we try, because one thing we're not going to do, I don't care what lingerie you buy or what aphrodisiac you use or how much Viagra you are able to consume, it doesn't unlock the brain. The imagination is the playground for all sexual fulfillment. And all it takes is an early childhood belief before there was a capacity for intellectual challenge and pushback. Now you could be a professor of philosophy and still be a prisoner of your earlier beliefs. Free the mind, the body follows. Open the mind to be the ultimate playground. Experience the same fulfillment that a great artist does when they experience letting it rip. And then you wonder why. Are some of the most sexual libertine individuals artists? Why is it easier for artists to experience themselves, not always, but in most cases, because That's where their art comes from. That's where that magical moment of enlightenment, to see something other than what we were told to see. Isn't it amazing? What we're told to believe, what we're told to eat, what we're told to vote for, what we're told is the truth we accept. Think of all the people in Japan today who now have lethal levels of radiation, who will in time, a year or 20 years from now, die of the radiation or leukemia because they chose not to challenge the beliefs. They were bounded by fear. By the way, the Japanese culture is not the only culture that is strongly controlled by indoctrinating. I mean heavy indoctrination, except unless you're a leader. Ah, then you get to get out of this hell free. You can have your own independence and live a different standard of life. But if you're not, then everything's for the company. Everything's for the country. So if you're told, stay within this 9-mile zone, this 12-mile zone, this 16-mile zone, it's safe. And you do. And then later someone says, no, it wasn't safe. And did you not realize that wind doesn't stop at 12 miles, 20 miles? And that if you were living in that invisible killer called radiation? And you would ask, why couldn't you just stop believing in your authority figures and just run away from that? Then take a look at how few people in the world today can run away from any of their realities. Their perception is their reality, their only reality. And if you can't change your perception, you can't change your reality. And truth is not locked into those perceptions. Those are masterfully manipulated social contracts. We're given something if we accept something. Even tonight, I was watching on 60 Minutes before I came downstairs to do the show, and they had a segment. It was a good segment for what it was, and I commend them for that, showing that the vast majority of people's homes that are being foreclosed on, the actual legal paperwork is all fraudulent. Now, if you commit a fraud, you'll go to trial or you'll go to jail immediately. There's no question about that. If you go into a supermarket, stick your hand in the cash register, take out $100 and walk out the store, I can promise you, you're going to go to jail. They steal your home, do it illegally, and they get out of jail free. And then what was remarkable about showing you the limitations of a free mind in journalism was when the CBS commentator said to the head of the banking oversight department of government, are we talking about billions? Oh, yeah, billions of dollars in this fraud. And all the banks, Bank America, they were all corrupt. All of them. And we know that. Well, what's the plan? Well, the plan is to make them put some money aside into an account that therefore will be able to pay the people whose mortgages are foreclosing on so the people won't sue them. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, go ahead and say it. Say it. I know you can. Even if you work for 16 minutes, you can say it. No. No, they don't. Because they work for 60 minutes, they couldn't have said the obvious. What's the obvious? Think for a moment. What am I thinking about right now that should have been the very next statement out of this man's mouth? If he was the kind of journalist that had freed his mind. These banks will never pay a penny. They can go right to the Federal Reserve window tomorrow morning and borrow whatever amount of money they're told they must now give in a fund to the government. Hence, it will not cost them a nickel, and they will immediately give the very junk assets over that are now liabilities as collateral. They get out of jail free. And if they're fined, the money they're paying is guess whose money? The Federal Reserve, the Treasury, the American public. That's how easy it is to understand how corrupt our systems are. Yet that would have really nailed it, and some people at home would have gone, ah, I see, don't let them borrow the money to get out of this jam. And no one asked this question. Why don't we just ask the President of the United States, point blank, oh, I forgot, real journalists are not allowed to ask these questions. Now, Mr. President, why don't you, by executive order, put a moratorium on all home foreclosure so you do not give a damn about the American public and all the people being thrown out of their houses? You want to protect the banks that are throwing them out. Why don't you stop giving money and demand the Federal Reserve stop giving money to the banks that are throwing people out of their houses? Oh, was that too tough a question to ask the president? Obviously, because no one's asked the president that. The logic is that's not used here, the reason that is not used, is just mind-numbing. No different than people who think that when they go to bed with their partner that they're going to have a sexual experience. And then before you can do anything, you roll over and you look and say, can I? No, you can't do that. What about this? No. Well, how about this? How about letting my... Oh, no, don't open that brain. Don't fantasize. This isn't about your fulfillment. This is about our need to control a basic and simple human response, pleasure. At some point, maybe we can actually have an adult conversation in our society about why we are a nation of fetishes living vicariously through everyone else. People are living through Charlie Sheen, a complete and total train wreck. Because of what? Because he walked off a television show? No. Because he is out of control in his own sex. And the fact he's having a lot of sex doesn't mean he's having fulfilling, happy sex. But people are fascinated by anything other than their own lives. What does that tell you about your own life? If you can't find it exciting, creative, dynamic, caring, nurturing, loving, and giving, then push the button and find someone else's life that's more interesting. If you took all the sex and all the violence around sex and all of the manipulation of sex out of all the media, then how few shows would be left on the air for you to select from? I'm Gary Nall. That's what we're opening with. Now your time for talk back. Give us a call, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And if you think this all isn't related, here's the latest on this issue from Science Daily, as reported in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science. Childhood psychological problems have long-term social impact. Quote, psychological problems experienced during childhood have long-lasting impacts on the individual's life course, reducing person's earnings, decreasing the chances of establishing long-lasting relationships. And so now think of all the people who mistaken the idea of manipulating relationships for quality of life. There's no shortage of people to meet and manipulate. But you're never going to find love in all those wrong places. You're never going to find fulfillment because you're coming with the idea of your own pain and your own fear. And that becomes the basis of that next relationship. Until it, too, goes on the junk heap of failed relationships. Then blame the people, never yourself. And go forward knowing there's an endless line of people willing to believe in the myth of your story. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Does she love me with all her heart? Should I worry when we're apart? It's a lover's question I'd like to know. Does she need me as she pretends? Is this a game? Well, then will I win? It's a lover's question I'd like to know. I'd like to know when she's not.
Do you remember that singer? What a voice. I'm Gary Nall. Your chance to call in, share your questions on any issue you find important, 888-874-4888. And I'm going to go to our amalgam dental silver filling discussion in a few moments, but I'd like to hear what's on your mind. By the way, I want to thank all the people who showed up in Central Park this morning. Wow, what a group, a tremendous group a largest group we've had in years and years. And next week at 9 o'clock at 5th Avenue and 90th Street, 9 a.m., we'll be having people who want to come to learn how to race walk or run the New York City Marathon. And we have 18 coaches, and it's free. And we have a website, Natural Living Running Club. So you'll have a chance to come and experience that. That's next Sunday, 9 a.m. I'll be there, and we look forward to getting you in great shape and helping you to understand how to balance your life by getting rid of everything that's not important and putting things that are important in it. We're the holistic running and walking club in New York. And then this afternoon, we had a wonderful group, packed group, here in our office, filled up our whole giant big room with ideas for the future, working on important projects. And we're going to go to work on that, and I'll tell you what we're working on, and on the globalization and World Bank, International Monetary Fund, on upcoming programs when the results come in of that. Let's say hello to Christine from New York City. Hi, Christine.
Gary, I heard...
Turn off your radio or whatever you're listening to me in the background. There's a delay.
Yeah, I just did just now. I just turned it off. Yeah, I heard on the European cable TV today that there's they're debating whether to let the public in Europe know that there's about the consumption of the cloned animals. And the problem is, they said the United States sends out cloned animals for consumption, and they don't want to have a trade war with the United States. So it seems that they're winning not to label them, that they were cloned animals.
Well, right now in the United States, there is a major effort, which the genetic engineering companies are winning, that prevents us from knowing which products, vegetables or animal products or byproducts of animals, such as milk, have been genetically engineered. That shouldn't surprise anyone who understands that virtually all of Obama's appointments and all of Bush's appointments were people from the biotech industry, including Michael Taylor and others from Monsanto. And at the same time that they were getting their position really strongly represented, genetic engineering, they were also passing Senate Bill 510 to limit organically grown small farmer produce. So it was a brilliant strategy that they have gone with. Now, what we've done on our side is we are working together, hundreds of groups, filed a lawsuit last week, and are now going to take the federal government to task to show them in Monsanto about the amount of bad science, and actually have a form to bring up all the articles to show how much danger there is in this. And now they've already started to push back by getting their propagandists and their media wonks to say that there's nothing wrong with genetic engineering. There's no proof. There's no science. To the contrary, we have an enormous amount of proof. So in the next couple of weeks, you will hear Dr. Shiva and dozens of other top experts in the field of genetic engineering on the program, giving you case points of what's wrong, why you shouldn't eat the corn, the soy, the tomato, the cucumber, the lettuce, the grapes, the milk from genetically engineered anything. So we have filed a lawsuit. The industry has. The small farmers, organic farming associations, we're all behind this. And we will be doing a series of in-depth articles and programs. I'm filming a documentary. In fact, I was filming earlier today. I filmed yesterday on this genetic engineering, the politics of genetic engineering, Frankenfood. So it's all coming your way. And the more we do and put it up on the Internet, the better it is when you share that information. And here's one of these phenomena. We're putting up, I just wrote an article, I wrote an important commentary on why we should not be in Libya, and I put it up. It's on GaryNall.com, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, and my Facebook page. It helps tremendously when you share that with everyone you know, and just keep sharing it, because this is information a person would not otherwise know. And we are going to be sending dozens of articles on different topics out for people to read, to educate them. Lay language, short articles, won't be overwhelming, won't confuse people, and not just one article, dozens on the same topic. This way, whether it's vaccines or mercury in your teeth, whatever it is, you'll have a lot of information from which to make a more intelligent and reasoned choice. Okay, Christine, so we're on top of this, and I'll keep you posted. If you go to GaryNall.com, if you go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, and you look under issues, you'll see the issues, and you can select the topic you want to be educated on. And there's lots of video and lots of audio and lots of articles.
Let's say, thank you. I love you, Gary.
All the best to you, Christine. Let's say hello to Easy from Spokane, Washington. Hi, Easy.
I've got a question, but first, it might be helpful if you sent out a list. Hello?
I'm listening.
Might be nice if you sent out a email on a subscription listserv to everyone that wants to get your recent articles. That way they don't have to go to the website every day. But my question is about what you would like every child on the planet to know. And it's in the context of after the incredible tipping points have tipped and flushed much of the government and corporate global corruption and those ways from the world, perhaps a new world can be nurtured. And what would you like every child on the planet to know about how the planet can be better for everyone, people and nature, and how they can nurture themselves and everyone?
Children are our most precious assets. These vital human beings need to be able to spend more time in nature, seeing the wonders of nature, seeing the compatibility we have when we live in balance with nature. And hence, taking children to a village in each country, in each state, in each county, everywhere in the world, that would show how we can live with solar and wind and geothermal or energy, how we can grow food locally and sell it, share it, exchange it, how we can make arts and crafts and clothes and things that are joyful, creative, and fun. How we can live where what we value is the quality of the love we share in our relationships and our interactions rather than what we own, so that a child is not driven to perform and become a little person, a little adult, instead of the innocence of a child. How a child should be taught yeses instead of always nos. How they should not be taught that we are born evil, which is stupid, and we are not, and it's vile. You start off telling someone that they're evil and that they're filled with mortal sin, you've just corrupted a child's life. And anyone who does that has got a very perverse sense of values. But then again, we have a lot of people like that, and people that support them who are as radically dysfunctional as they are propagandists for their own views. We have to show what comes when you look at people as human beings instead of races. Look at people as special, spiritual, and loving creatures. When you take love into an environment, then you don't take fear. When people are communicating through love, they don't fight. They don't commit acts of violence against each other. Because you see that a child in Iraq or Afghanistan or Libya is as precious as any child in America. But then again, children in America were not precious. The pharmaceutical industry wanted to use the children southeast Los Angeles in vaccine experiments, and they didn't allow the children of Indian Native Americans to learn or keep any of their native heritage. They had brought in English-speaking-only school teachers and kept people prisoners to a foreign culture. And so a child dying of depleted uranium in Libya, which will happen now because of all the exploded munitions, all those missiles that cost $1.5 million per missile also have depleted uranium, then you don't value that. So if you show people what causes people to thrive and what causes them to live in dysfunction, where their whole life is just going to be used running from their fears and past and using other people in the process, of which there are no shortage of people doing that today. When you can teach a child to value the inner journey, not just the outer journey, and not to be afraid of their own creative minds, then that child will grow up and will not contribute to the next tipping point. Now, the view I would share that would be different than your view is, you're assuming that corporate America and the government, once they're wiped out by these tipping points, the reality is they will not be affected at all by the tipping points, but all those people who do not have the power and control to be in the places they need to be to continue government, continue industry, continue commerce will be the people, the average people, who have historically been the victims. Go down to the lower ninth ward where I was just 6-8 weeks ago and look at dirt poor people, poorer than Camden, New Jersey. And by the way, they had Father Dowd on PBS today. And it's interesting because when I interviewed Father Dowd for my Poverty Inc. film, the next day I took down a truckload of food for his parishioners, organic grains and beans that would help them. I'd like to see if Channel 13, hypocrites of the universe that they are and completely manipulated by a special dilettante, I can't work in the real world because I would be called out. These are the people, I can't tell you how disappointed I am in and PBS and many of these other institutions that supposedly are bastions of liberal. There's nothing liberal about them. They're corporatized from top to bottom. But at the end of the day, all those people in the Ninth Ward, none were politicians, none were corporatists, none were millionaires, billionaires, none were social leaders. They were just average people. And that's what you're going to find everywhere when everything tips. The people who will have the life rafts are not the poor ones. Thank you for your call, Easy, from Spokane, Washington. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. See that we have Dr. Martin Feldman on the line, and let's go over before the end of the program and say hello to Martin Feldman, who's going to talk about our eyes. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Gary. Very interesting program. Now we're on to the eyes. We have to see, otherwise nothing else really helps us. We got to see what's going on. So we're going to talk about one aspect of vision, which is what's called age-related macular degeneration, ARMD, age-related macular degeneration. However, it does not have to occur, and the conventional doctors say, well, as you age, this has to occur. It's part of the whole aging process, degeneration of the system. It does not have to occur. It's also a aspect of health and life whereby you can diagnose yourself early on, which is as follows. The macula is the center of the visual field whereby the fine vision, as we read, it's central vision. As the macula becomes degenerated, therefore, the vision becomes wavy. The lines on a page become wavy and bent. There's an expansion of the problems of vision from the center going outward. Actually, you can do that on your own, but there's also what's called an Amsler grid. Amsler grid is sort of a tic-tac-toe board, but very much more finer, and you look at the grid, you see if there are wavy lines in the center or not. The sooner you see the wavy lines, either on your own or Amsler grid, you must enter. And we can very, very easily correct this process, and it should be corrected as soon as possible. It is actually a very, very severe issue if it progresses. There are two basic kinds of macular degeneration. There's the first kind, what's called dry or atrophy. And this occurs about 85% of macular degeneration is that type, versus what's called wet. Wet is much more severe. It's maybe 10-15%. In the dry kind, what's going on is that the retinal cells are impinged by debris that's sort of degenerates on the retina, in large part from free radicals, and also sometimes from diminished blood supply to that area and diminished oxygen to the area. The wet kind is much more severe in that you have a leakage of fluid into the macular area, very hard to remove that fluid. If it's the wet kind, the sooner you have a diagnosis of wet kind, laser can be very helpful to stop the fluid leakage. And it's very important, and it's safe. It's part of I would say conventional medicine, where sometimes things are right, and this is one part of conventional medicine. Laser for wet macula is very good, very helpful. Risk factors. Who's going to get this quicker than aging? As follows. Anyone with atherosclerosis, these are what we call risk factors. Atherosclerosis, increased blood pressure will provoke it. Cigarettes will provoke it, and certain foods will provoke it, especially hydrogen fats, grilled meats especially. I see patients come with grilled meats, and their macular degeneration is much more rapid and much more severe. Caffeine doesn't help it, it makes it worse. Sugar makes it worse. Alcohol makes it worse. These are all risk factors that got to be avoided. What about some of the foods to help out the retina to get back on track, the macula? Whole grains are helpful. Beans are helpful. The carotenoids, this is a group of foods called carotenoids. And, for example, lycopene is a carotenoid and found in tomatoes, carrots, green peppers, apricots, pink grapefruit, and other foods. But that's very, very good for lycopene food. Next is zeaxanthin. Zeaxanthin in foods, spinach, paprika, corn, and many fruits. Third, lutein. Lutein, important as well. Green plants, corn, potatoes, spinach, carrots, tomatoes, red, blue, and purple. Any foods with those colors, especially fruits. Now, if all that is a good start, we also have supplements that are very, very helpful, inexpensive, and very effective. But you just have to have a little bit of a background. I'll just go over some of those supplements simply. Lutein as a supplement, 15 milligrams a day, is a kind of a beginning dose. Zeaxanthin as a supplement, around 3 milligrams, a beginning dose. Zinc, 35 to 40 milligrams. Ginkgo biloba can be helpful, 120 milligrams once or twice a day. Bilberry, very, very helpful, very important, 40 to 80 milligrams, two, three times a day even. DHA, especially important, 1,000 mg per day as a starter. Vitamin E, 600 to 800 IUs per day. Grapeseed extract, 150 to 300 per day. Selenium, 200 mcg per day for openers. We can go higher. And last but not least is lycopene, 3 milligrams. We have here a condition which you can diagnose yourself if you pay attention. The sooner you find it, the better. But for sure, it's better to not have it occur at all. Even doesn't matter. I've seen patients in 70s, 80s, 90s, if they're on good diet, and they take a lot of these supplements, they don't have to get to any age-related anything. Macula stays intact. It's very preventable. And it's such a tragic illness because if people go blind, it's a very, 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 very severe condition. And this is something we can all help ourselves to prevent and to even reverse.
Major information. Thank you very much, Marty Feldman. Dr. Martin Feldman's in New York City. He's a holistic, board-certified neurologist. And you can reach him if you need questions answered at 212-744-4413. I'm looking at the clock, and I don't have enough time left to do my silver filling. So I'm going to do it tomorrow on my program, and I'm going to do it right at the top. So I put my notes so that that's the first thing I deal with. So that means I have a few minutes left to take any of your calls on any of the issues you find important. So now the lines are open, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. So let's see who wants to call in. Call in now, and you'll get on the line. While we're waiting, here's a couple things that are important for you. Something you have not heard about that will help you if you wish to detoxify from radiation exposure. And it is zeolite. Z-E-O-L-I-T-E. Now, this is an interesting piece, and let me quote this. It says from Paula Rothstein. It says, Natural News. It says, as we watch the situation developing in Japan, the fears we held for decades with regards to possible nuclear fallout scenarios felt as close as a heartbeat. The potentiality of future exposure to radiation is both real and frightening. In this universe, we share the same air, and it is only varying levels of discomfort which separate us from our neighbors. Unfortunately, we have little control over what chemicals will be unleashed into the environment, but we try to minimize personal damage through protective substances and detoxification. Potassium iodine was quickly made available to the general public and encouraged as a necessary part of a diet supplementation from the fallout from the nuclear power plant. It's also worth considering the role of zeolite and what it's played in past nuclear fallout situations, as well as its potential usefulness for human detoxification. Following radiation exposure, there are larger and long-term concerns which need to be addressed with regards to other radioactive elements such as cesium, strontium, uranium, plutonium. Radioactive iodine-131 has the ability to break down in the body. However, heavy metals are essentially stored in fat cells and tissues, damaging DNA for decades. In response to the 1986 Chernobyl and Three Mile Island nuclear disaster, what is called zeolite, was effectively used for purposes of cleanup for both land and water. In Chernobyl, over 500,000 tons of zeolite were dropped into the reactor to absorb radioactive metals. Cattle were fed zeolite to effectively keep radioactive iodines out of their milk. Contaminated soil was treated with zeolite to help return it to near zero levels of cesium strontium. Zeolite was used to clean up water surrounding Three Mile Island following the nuclear plant's partial meltdown. There is ample documentation to support the safe and effective use of zeolite for purposes of human detoxification. Numerous zeolites are found in nature. However, it is specifically, and I'll spell this for you, C-L-I-N-O-P-T-I-L-O-L-I-T-E, zeolite, which has been found to be useful for detoxification and to be safe for human consumption. Okay, good. Let's say hello to Austin from Jersey City. Hi, Austin.
Hi, Gary. How you doing?
Good.
Gary, I just wanted to say I was a volunteer at the film shoot at the Charter School in Newark a few weeks ago, and I just want to give testament to what a wonderful, beautiful experience it was seeing those kids give testimony. As you had said afterwards, that you had no idea how the presentation was going to be structured and how moved you were. And I just wanted to say that just being there was great and helping the guys, the camera guys, and it was just an all-around beautiful experience.
I would second that. And what's important is now Verna Gray is continuing with the individuals because they didn't want to stop at 4 months. Since, remember the woman whose blood sugar, resting, fasting blood sugar,
yeah,
was at 390 with medications, and today with no medications is at 110. That's an enormous drop in blood sugar, which means that now she is out of that diabetic and metabolic syndrome danger zone, and lost weight and improvement in energy, focus in the students. I was just blown away by hearing all their testimonies because I had not interviewed any of them personally, even though they were getting their weekly medicals done. So now, by providing them with whole grains and beans and books and videos and everything else, they are going to continue on for another year. So we will revisit them in a year to see how one group of teachers and faculty, parents and students are coming to grips with the choices they have. And what was important is the young girl, I think she was 6 years old, who said she didn't know there were choices when it came to health. Now she does. And when I realize how many people, how many average Americans have been so indoctrinated by the politics of healthcare and food selection and beverages and the kind of the let's all drink this and eat this because it makes us feel good rather than is it good for us, then one day they wake up and they don't realize how our society has contributed to our diseases. Now they do, and now they're not going back. As one young boy said, I don't want my mother to ever be sick again. Now she's able to get up out of bed, and she's able to go to work before she was not. These are all individuals living below the poverty line. They are very poor. But that's also why we can only end poverty when we cooperate with those who are poor. It does us no good to continue to ratchet up the level of our arguments of why we cannot go into the poor communities and make changes. We can just, like the very foolish notion that was in New Jersey when they threw $173 million in Camden into the government, which misspent it, but not a nickel trickled down to the average person. You could remove poverty in Camden and the lower Ninth Ward in New Orleans and all the other places in America if you really wanted to end poverty. The trouble is, as a nation, we are not selfless enough at this moment to embrace those who are suffering. That is my opinion. Even the people who rightly demonstrated in Wisconsin for the right reasons, collective bargaining, I support. But how many of those people could have used their 120,000 strength to have gone and made human chains around the banks that were foreclosing on their neighbors' homes, many of their students' homes, the parents in their classes? They didn't. And how many of them could have gone out and to have started food co-ops and to feed the poor in Wisconsin in their communities? Didn't happen. How many of them could have used it as a forum also to say, if we've come together on this right cause, why can't we also be against the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and the 1,000 military bases around the world that we have no problem funding? When you're funding a base in Germany, $1 billion a year, and yet you don't have enough money to pay for police, food, shelter, broken down buildings in Newark or other cities, then where are our priorities? But it didn't happen. We have not yet crossed that path that says we go from those who are self-interested to those who are selfless and looking for the common good. I believe that we are approaching that when critical mass occurs, where enough problems occur that we must look to one another for mutual support and help. And then we will come together. And then we will take one issue and galvanize a positive response with solutions towards everything that is a problem. Thank you very much, Austin. I appreciate you giving us a call. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all very much for listening. Now let's go over and say hello to Michael Rupert and see what's on his show coming up right now. Michael.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good. What you have for us tonight?
Well, this is my first show from my new home in Sebastopol, California, on 2 acres of land with well and all kinds of good stuff. And we're going to talk about a lot of the stuff that's going on. We're going to do some updates on the situation in Japan, both as following on the nuclear incident, but also on the really apparent economic fallout now. We have some great reports from a rice farmer who is one of the people who helps compile the links for our World News Desk at CollapseNet. I'm going to be reading that. That's eyeball reporting. He lives in Japan. And then we're going to just take some calls tonight, let people tell us where we want to go.
Okay, I want to share one thought with you. If you have time to deal with it tonight, fine. If not, it's okay.
Sure.
It is my opinion that one of the reasons that both the United States government and certainly the Japanese government have not been as completely forthright and honest is because Japan until last year was the second largest economy behind the United States. Now it's third behind China. They are virtually helpless as far as being self-sufficient at this time.
That's correct.
And if this disaster continues to expand, and if the radiation shifts and goes into the island, then what you will have is you will have another Chernobyl zone, because if you took the entire island with Tokyo not far south from there and you put that over a template, which I have done, of Chernobyl, you are still in the disaster zone of Chernobyl, meaning all of Japan would be considered incompatible with life.
That's correct.
Which means their currency would collapse, which means that you would not be able to buy product from Japan, which, because anything made in a radioactive environment stays radioactive. We have no way of decontaminating those issues. But also, where are you going to do with the 36 million people? What where are they going to go? What are they going to eat? What would happen to the world currencies? What would happen to other countries that are based upon cooperation with Japan? Because outside of London and New York, Japan is the industrial trade zone that exchanges the currencies in that part of the world. Those
You're
are simply some thoughts.
You're going to want to listen to the show, Gary, because that's exactly what I was going to talk about.
Excellent. We look forward to it. Michael Rupert coming with you in just a moment. Please stay with him.
Thanks, Gary.